Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, beautiful humans. Welcome to episode 43 of Crovisation. Took a little gap there, guys. Just a little one. I don't really know how much time has passed, if I'm being totally honest. It's been 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I'm sorry. But mad shit has been going on, friends, okay? I don't know what it is about my life, but there's always something going on. That is not an exaggeration. I mean, it's never boring, so that's fine. But it's all... I mean, it's overall positive things that will be happening. The things that happened in the past are very bad, and that's where the positive things are happening now. So, I just got to get through it. I just got to get through it. Down at Bedingfield. Is that right? Anyway, this week's guest is a super, super awesome human being. She's such an interesting human. Our conversation was quite long, I think. It was so lovely and so relaxing. And I always say this about my guests, but I feel like we're such similar human beings. And she is such a good human being. She has been through stuff, you guys. She is a fighter. And she's got some really, really, really great explanations for so many topics that we discuss in this episode. And you are going to enjoy it thoroughly. Thoroughly. This week's guest is the awesome QB. She and I met quite some years ago, you know, when I was still throwing events, suicide girl events. That's how we met. Good old SG. And, yeah, well, we've always had snippets of conversations, but it's always been in, like, clubs or bars, and I've always been, like, nodding along furiously, but also trying to make out what people are saying over the yelling of the music and the people and the things and the, you know, all that usual stuff. So it was so good to sit down with her and have, like, a proper chat about some of the topics that we touched on briefly in person and go really in-depth to a lot of them and really mine out her brain. I feel like QB came across so authentically here that you are going to get such an amazing impression of her, on who she is as a person, just through this episode. Like, this is a textbook excellent episode of, or at least of a podcast. I don't know what word I was going to use there. Anyway, that's enough waffling from me. I guess I've missed the sound of my own voice. Clearly. If you would like to find me on social media, friends, you may find me on Instagram at Riots and Crows. RIOTSANDCROWS. And then you can find me everywhere else on the internet at Cats and Crows. KATSANDCROWS. I'm going to go back to Twitter. Arguing with a bunch of transphobes, etc. Here. Oh, I would like to pop a few trigger warnings as well, just off the top of my head in this episode, for discussions of mental health, for discussions of self-harm, discussions of suicide, and other surrounding topics in mental health. It's nothing graphic, nothing deep, but just in case you're having a one of those days, a precarious day, and you should be kind to your mind. That's what I'm trying to say, friends. If you'd like to leave me a little rating and a review as well, that would be really nice of you, because I need some encouragement to get back in the saddle and get right in this podcast off into the sunset again. Or not today, because fucking hell, it's miserable in England. The great British summer is upon us, friends. All right, beautiful humans. Please enjoy the amazing QB on episode 43 of Crovisation.
When I was growing up, all my role models were male. I didn't see anyone I could relate to in the press, online, anywhere. Now, I'm surrounded with the most phenomenal women. They've each endured unique hardships and survived. More than survived, they thrive. But still, women are not equal in the world, not represented in the media, not treated equally online, and still subjected to sexism in everyday life. Alternative women especially are more a hashtag than they are real humans. I want to change that. I want you to see the women I see. I want you to hear them. This is Crovisation.
Hi, beautiful humans. I'm with a beautiful aesthetic. I'm staring right now at a beautifully blue-toned aesthetic, and it's so soothing to my eyes. Please welcome my beautiful guest this week, QB.
Whoop, whoop, hee, hee, here I am.
How are you? How are you? Because we're recording today, 3rd of July, late-stage global pandemic, perhaps. Lots has happened. How are you feeling right now?
I guess for the sake of like complete honesty, there is a lot going on. Like, yes, there is a global pandemic.
So
working full time, two kids, my mum, you know, sickly members of my family, and it's a lot.
That's a lot.
Actually, yes.
God
it's,
damn.
It's a lot of stuff.
I've spoken to another mother. She's been on lockdown. My friend Jessie. But she only has one young kid. I can't imagine what it must be like to have two kids and to be caring for your mum too.
Yeah.
Girl, how are you managing that? Like, tell me literally how.
You know what? It's really funny. I was talking about this yesterday because my son has actually spent the whole of lockdown with his dad.
Nice.
Because his nan isn't well. So he's stayed there to shield, but to also be with his nan while he's not well. I guess it's strange for me, right? Because I've got teenagers. So I've got a 16-year-old and a 13-year-old.
Mm.
So most of the time, they don't want to talk to me anyway.
They're chill. They're just in their rooms on the internet arguing with
basically.
People that are trying to destroy the world that they're growing up in.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's been a weird one because, like, my daughter is all about the social media. And obviously, like, for my job, I work with young people. So I'm like, you're not allowed TikTok. You're not allowed Snapchat. And I'm the devil incarnate.
QB, for those people that are listening that haven't met you in person and had a fascinating conversation with you, like I have had the privilege of, can you introduce yourself and give us a little rundown of what you do? I know you work with kids and you're very sex positive and I love all that. And we were going to collaborate on something at some point and it never happened.
Yes, yes. Okay, so a bit of background about me. I am 35 years old and I work with children and young people. I have primarily worked for charities, and it's really interesting that you say that I'm sex positive, because I started in the realm of like youth work by being a sexual health peer educator.
Ah.
So what I did was I went into schools and I talked about sex and relationships, the laws surrounding sex. And I guess my job has really colored the way I think about things, because I started that job when I was quite young.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Wow, that's really interesting. How young were you when you started going into schools and talking about sex and stuff?
So I was 23, but I already had two kids at that point, and I am a teenage mum, or I was a teenage mum, whatever the sense is. And I found this charity completely by accident, and I actually went there as a young parent for parenting courses, because
Oh
when
my
you are a
gosh, of course.
teenager, they send you in that direction. They're like, well, you're young, so you have to do parenting classes to know
You
what you're
clearly
doing.
have no idea what you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, guys.
And through that, they were like, oh, you know, we have this other program where we're training up peer educators if you'd like to, you know, get involved with that. And I did. And the rest is history.
That's awesome. I mean, that's awesome that you took from what could have been quite a begrudging experience, and you've taken something and you've made it into your life.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely hated the parenting group. I went to like one
Yeah.
session.
Tell me about how that made you feel that they made you go there. Because to me, I'd be like, why are you telling me what to do?
I think at that age, you know, I was 17.
Yeah.
So that really should have been the age where I should probably have thought, oh, you know what, this is community. Let me, you know, let me revel in the fact that there are other people in the same situation as me. But, you know, it feels like a whole other world ago. If I was 18 now and that was the situation, I would have been like, oh my God, there's so many people that have so much in common with me.
That's
Instead,
true.
all I felt was the stigma, and I hated it.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like, even what do they call them? Prenatal classes
Yeah.
were horrendous. Because, you know, I went with my mom, and then there were other people who were like, you know, I'm in my 40s, this is my third baby, this is my husband. And I'm
Wow,
like,
such contrast, yeah.
so I'm here pretty much on my own. Here's my mum, but you know, I'm 17. It's the first time I've done this.
Yeah. And you
I
felt
feel
it.
really uncomfortable.
Damn. I mean, I can't even imagine what that would feel like, but yeah, that must have been quite a character building experience.
Absolutely. I
Yeah.
thought I was prepared. I thought I knew what I was doing, but life taught me differently.
Life does that,
Oh, yeah, you know, life fucks us all.
right? Wow. So that must have been, I mean, like, did you continue working through like your pregnancy and having a young child, or did you take a pause for a while? Like, let's get along that timeline.
Okay, so when I was pregnant with my son, I was doing my A levels. And it's really interesting because when I before I got pregnant, I was quote unquote rebelling, bunking off school, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Get it.
And everyone was like, you're gonna fail. You really need to pull your finger out, like come and do what you've got to do. You know, you need to pass your A levels. And then when I got pregnant, everyone was like, you know what, you're pregnant. It's fine if you don't pass. And me,
Really?
like my thinking was like, wait, hold on a minute. You used to care and now you don't care and you all think I'm gonna fail. So like fuck every single one of you. I'm gonna pass now.
Yeah. What's that?
So I was really lucky. I you know, when I got like my grades for like the first year of college, I got a D, an E, and a U. So I didn't even
That's better than
rank for a
me.
grade. And then I did my A level exams 3 weeks before I had my son.
Wow,
And
stress.
I ended up with an A, a B, and a C.
Yes,
So
Queen.
that's my 16-year-old now. And then with my 13-year-old, I was pregnant all through the second year of uni, had my daughter, and then I was back at uni 3 weeks later.
Really? You really don't
Yeah,
stop, do you?
my mum would drive the car to uni, and I would breastfeed in the car during like breaks and stuff.
Oh my gosh, what an angel. Has your mom always been supportive? Because that must have
Yes
been,
and
that must have been quite a
no.
big wave through your family, was that?
I mean that could, so for those of you, because I guess you're just hearing my voice. So for
Yeah.
those of you who don't know me, I'm of mixed ethnic background, and my mum is from the Philippines, which is a, you know, in the part that we're from is a very strictly Catholic part. So you know, there
Right.
was a whole dealing with sex before marriage.
Yep.
Out of, you know, doing things out of wedlock and refusing to get married once, you know, once we knew
Wow.
I was pregnant, I was like,
Proper
nope, I'm not getting
rebellious,
married, I'm not
yeah.
doing that. So, you know, my mom probably really struggled with that, but I guess again, you know, because of my cultural background, it was never a question that I was whether I was going to finish school or not.
It was so, happening.
Yeah. So my mum was like, you know, if you do your degree, if you finish your degree, whatever, I will help you do that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like that could, I mean, it could have gone a lot worse. I mean, not to diminish your experience anyway, but that's fucking awesome about it.
Yeah, I think it, I suffered with postnatal depression with my first child, with my son. And it is one of those things is, it's really difficult to balance like mental health and your drive.
Yeah.
Because on one hand, you know, you have all these feelings that, you know, tell you you're inadequate or you're feeling low or whatever, what have you.
Mm.
And then there's also this, you know what, let me talk about my personal experience. There's something about me that really wants to like stick my middle finger up and be like, fuck every single one of you that doesn't think I can do this because I'm going to make relate. It work.
So hard to relate. Good. I can see that character in you now. I really can.
Was your
mom like a rebellious younger person, do you think? Or is she rebellious in any way? Because I can totally trace my rebellion or rebelliousness back to my parents.
Yeah, so, I mean, my mom was born during the Second World War. So my mom is like an older parent.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was back home in the Philippines, you know, she didn't put a foot out of line. She did what people told her to. She did what was expected of her.
Mm.
But when she decided to emigrate, she literally picked a country where we have no other family. So all of our families, like in the States, we have a lot of family in Hawaii, in Hawaii. And my mum was like, I'm going to England where no one can tell me what to do.
Wow. Okay. I see the rebelliousness.
Yeah. So she's definitely rebellious in her own way. Although, you know, that wasn't until her like late 30s, but she was just like, I've had enough. I'm leaving.
Oh, wow. So defiant is the word that comes to mind, I guess.
Yeah.
When I think about you and your brother now. Wow. That's awesome.
And my mom's a really cool chick, actually, you know, because she was a single mom as well. So,
I see. Yeah, I was going to say, how did that relationship develop, like from being a child to being a mother yourself and then have a relationship with your mother?
It really opens your eyes to the struggle your parents had.
Yeah.
That you didn't necessarily, like, because when you're a child, you're selfish.
Yeah.
In the sense that, you know, you're not aware of what's going on around you. You kind of take your own experience for golden. So it's like, you know, my mom worked really, really hard. She used to work like 42-hour weeks.
Damn, and
something like that. Yeah. And like crazy. Now, and I work full time. But I've had so much help and she really didn't. And I'm just like, I actually don't physically know how you did this.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds remarkable. It sounds so inspirational. A single mother moving to a country where it's not her cultural norm, or she doesn't even have any relatives or friends or know anyone.
Yeah.
I mean, like, way to make your life super hard, but also I'm like speechless with admiration. That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hilarious because when she retired, she tried to go back home.
Did she?
And she didn't last very long. She was just like, I can't be here because people still want to know where I'm going, what I'm doing.
Oh, really?
And she came back.
She was like, I've been gone for 25 years and still.
Can't do this.
Really? That's awesome. Yeah. I love that. I love that she's being so true and authentic to yourself, to herself even.
Yeah.
Do you think that you're true and authentic to yourself? Do you think that's something she's passed on?
I think it took me a while to figure out who I was and how to live that authentically. So for example, you know, when you said to me, how are you? I made a pledge to myself a couple of, maybe almost a decade ago. Yeah, almost a decade ago. That like, so I was diagnosed with bipolar 2.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's that saying, like when people say how are you, they're just expecting you to go, oh, I'm all right. So like a little while ago I was like, you know what, I'm gonna live true to myself, and when people ask me questions I'm gonna be brutally honest, and if it makes them uncomfortable when I'm talking about my experience, that's something I have to learn to live with,
and that's something on them.
Yeah. And even, you know, like dyeing my hair, for example, like there aren't, I think it's becoming more popular now, but like people from the Philippines, Southeast Asian people, like breaking out of what is expected of you.
Yeah.
Like familial duty is such a huge thing. My mum always used to, like, obviously I'm tattooed, and my mum's like, you know, the only people back home who have those tattoos are, you know, criminals and prostitutes. And you know, you're just like, that's
wow, so many things. A lot of baggage.
You're just like, oh my god, I can't even cope. Hilarious. Because before we were colonized by the Spanish and the Portuguese in the Philippines, we were actually called the Island of the Painted Ones.
Oh my
because
goodness.
Because we have a really rich history in tattooing. Like our tattoo culture was strong. So it's really strange that people think that when you start to break into this quote unquote alternative world.
Completely whitewashed. And they refuse to even admit they have a problem with it. It drives me insane.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So breaking out of your family norms, that must have been a tough journey for you. To people listening now that are probably going through the same thing, do you have any advice for them?
I think you kind of have to weigh up what is going to bring you joy. And if you feel that living your true, authentic self will bring you joy, then, you know, you only you can decide if that's a path you want to follow. And I'm not saying that it will bring you joy 100% of the time, but you will feel so much better for being your authentic self when you are ready and choose to make those kinds of steps.
I really like that. How long did it take you to figure that out? Like, honestly, because I only just figured it out pretty much this year to be authentic to myself.
Well, I'm really pro therapy. And it just so happens that my best friend is a therapist, even though we don't break those ethical kind of guidelines about her giving me therapy. So I guess when I chose to take medication for my mental health, I was quite lucky because I pushed, you know, with the NHS and everything to do therapy and take medication at the same time. So I would say it's been about, it's probably been about 10 years. And it involves a lot of like self-work, a lot of spending time being really vulnerable.
Yep.
A lot of time being introspective.
Sitting in your head, right? Yeah, that's where the work has to happen.
Understanding where you're at and then becoming comfortable with it. But I would say, even though I'm aware of it, I'm not comfortable with it all the time.
Same. I mean, it's so easy to get swept up in just anything in the world, isn't it? I think people are really critical on themselves for being not their author. It's almost in the same way the self-care movement was a bit weaponized. It was like, you should love yourself the way you are. It's like, you should be authentic to yourself all the time. And it's like, sometimes I don't know, and it's okay to not know.
You know? And I think the self-care movement, like you said, it has been weaponized. It's also been very, like, whitewashed, but it's also been very middle and upper classed.
So much. Financially pricing out people. People can't afford to have bubble baths and go to the spa all the time.
Yeah, and also it's for obnoxious. Me, like, yoga isn't is an Asian, like, movement
or
a part of like religion and stuff like that. I'm not necessarily sure how I feel about not having an Asian person teach me.
It's so weird. There's a yoga studio near me that's run by all white women, and I don't know anything about them, but it feels weird. It just feels weird. It doesn't feel right. It's like it's a full, like, if there was a physical metaphor for appropriation, that's it. And the fact that people don't see that's when it's so blatant. It's like, we're teaching this, but we're definitely white women. It's scary that people can't see them.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, the amount it costs to take part in certain forms of self-care, it's like, you know, you can have a bubble bath with like Avon stuff or like whatever kind of makes you happy. It doesn't have to be this really expensive stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you choose to meditate, you don't need to be paying for all this
for £20 stuff. Every month. Yeah,
it's a bit insane to me. And I also think, you know, self-care isn't necessarily just, yes, it's really nice to pamper yourself, but that's not the only type of self-care that exists.
100%.
You know, read a book, sleep. Like, sleep is all healing.
Rest. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If you can. And then also trying to live with, like, the guilt of taking time for yourself.
How dare you? How dare you do something that doesn't earn you money in capitalism all time?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's your relationship with self-care, QB? Because I've developed a very heavy one with my self-care to manage my mental health. And I imagine you must be the same.
You know what? I'll actually put my hands up and say I'm really bad at self-care.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Okay, so my mum taught me as a child that, like, as a mum, you give everything to your children. Mm. And when you're at work, that's your me time, because that's when you get to be an adult. And then when you come home and the door shuts, you have to be a mum.
Your mum again, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's always that little voice in my head, whether it's good or bad.
She's imprinted. Parents are imprinted, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, you spend the whole day at work, and I work with people. So I spend most of the day talking or, like, taking on other people's feelings. Mm. And then I get home, and then homework, dinner, et cetera, et cetera. And then when it's time for bed, or when it's time for the kids to go to bed.
Yeah.
I am shattered.
Yeah. You're already like.
Yeah. And so, and that's, like, sleep is one of my favorites because it's like a reset.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely need it. It's one of the ones that creates the most health problems, really, doesn't it? So,
yeah,
at least you're prioritizing sleep, but nothing else?
I mean, I journal. So, I craft a lot. So, I'm currently in the middle of a renovation. So, you're actually in one of the new rooms of the house. This is what you can see.
Oh, I love the colour scheme. I'm here for it.
Thank you so much. Can you tell I have a favourite colour? Guys, it's teal.
Same!
Love teal. So, all my craft stuff is currently packed away. But I do like lots of junk journaling, sketching. Yeah. I'm not good at drawing, but, you know, it's fun.
Don't have to be good at something to do it, right?
You don't have to be good at it.
I think that's really important.
Yeah, so I've been painting lots of secondhand furniture because awesome. I am really big on, I guess, reduce, reuse, recycle.
So important. It's a hugely impactful thing.
Yeah, so, yeah, I like to paint furniture and do crafty bits. So that's I cool. would say that's carving a chunk of time.
Yeah, that I think self-care and being creative is such an underrated thing. People... I think everybody's so pushed to monetize everything that they do, even if it's creative, that they forget that they can also do it as self-care. Like, I've started doing knife throwing. And
nice.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, I was like, sure, I'm going to knife throw during lockdown, whatever. And I was thinking about adding it into my axe, but, like, I also find it really therapeutic, and I'm not sure if I want to add the stress of the work. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Like, this is something you're doing just...
purely for me, yeah. Come on, internet.
For you, why does it need to be for it to be a value?
Yeah, exactly. It's a value to me because my mind afterwards is so calm and wonderful. And then I think if I add work into it, because, like, as much as I love my job and it is my passion, it's exhausting. Yeah. And I get sick of it, and I don't ever want to get sick of knife throwing. But maybe that's something that I'm overthinking. Maybe I will get sick of it anyway. So maybe I should monetize it.
I know that you're asking the questions, but I guess this is something that, because the thing about your job with you being on social medias and stuff like that is your job must take more of your day than even my job does. Because I go to work and then when I leave, I'm done.
Yeah, I can never shut the door on it. I'm sat right now. You see me, not you listeners, but you do. See me in my office. And if I literally turn around, I can see my lounge. I can see my bedroom. I can see my kitchen. Mm. Yeah, so I'm in it all the time, especially during lockdown. Yeah. So
yeah,
it's been tricky. But you've been working at home in lockdown, I assume.
Yeah.
How's that been?
It's been really intense because... as part of my job, what I'm doing are like phone one-to-ones with vulnerable children and young people. And, you know, whereas normally I might be in a school or at a youth centre and working with the group, now I'm working with children and young people in a really intense way. So I'm not a trained counsellor and I'm not a trained therapist, but right. it's like weekly check-ins to see how, you know, how they're doing. And you know, I've had to deal with things like, you know, one of my young people's grandparents died from COVID.
Oh, so sad. And, it's like, a tough time. Yeah. As was a lot of that right now.
Yeah. And it's really hard to know what to say. And really, you know, you should spend more time listening than speaking. And sometimes they don't want to speak. And being comfortable with being uncomfortable is what I feel like that's one of the lessons I've learned during lockdown.
Yeah, I always find it quite awkward. I'm not a particularly like kid savvy person. I don't know at what point that happened, but I just feel uncomfortable talking to kids. Like, I feel like I never get myself across to them properly or whatever. So firstly, how did you discover that you wanted to work with, well, obviously that you went through the classes to young people. How did you discover that you're working with young people is your passion, and how do you feel about it now?
So when I was a kid, I was already working with kids. So like at my church that I went to when I was, you know, younger, I would run like craft clubs for like the younger kids and stuff like that. But it was more like, you know, over the summer holidays, we all get bored. What should we do? What doesn't cost very much?
Right.
And then when I went and did this sexual health peer education program, part of the program was that as part of your probation, I guess, you would go and teach a lesson in a school with 30 young people.
Wow.
And I was so nervous. I was shaking.
I'd be petrified. My voice was shaking.
And then I kind of went, and I guess this is a bit where like my drama training kind of came into it, is like you put on the show, you fake it till you make it.
Yep.
And it just so happened by complete accident that I was good at it.
Amazing.
And I loved it.
Yeah, you loved it straight away.
Yeah. And I guess there's something really freeing when you spend all your day, your whole day, sorry, I can't even speak properly. When you spend your whole day talking about sex, there's something very freeing in talking about such a taboo subject.
Yeah.
And you get this like weird kind of feeling. So like one of the lessons that we would do is teenage parents would talk about teenage pregnancy. So I would tell my giving birth story.
Wow.
And you know, when you can see exactly, and you can see every child clench and you're like, I've done my job properly.
Amazing. So what is your, without breaching any confidentiality or vulnerable people's privacy, what does your job entail exactly?
So my job now is I'm teaching resilience to children and young people through different programs. And you know, what's been quite freeing about this job is like part of our job, should we choose to, because it's down to each facilitator, is to tell our story. And so like when I explain to young people that I suffer from bipolar disorder, you know, they're amazed by like little things like, oh my god, you have a job, oh my god, you're a parent. And you know, it's always after I tell my story that two or three kids will, you know, hold back after session,
really,
and be like, I'm really anxious, I hate walking down the road by myself, or you know, and they'll open up to you because they see an adult who is living or has lived their experience, and it makes them feel safe.
There's hope.
I love that they feel like they can come and talk to me, and I love that I feel like I'm making some sort of difference.
Yeah, you really are. That's amazing. So, yeah. What a great feeling that must be. I mean, I would be absolutely petrified to go talk to kids in school, but to have a kid open up to you, that must be, especially as a parent, you know
how much, especially young people, don't want to talk to adults. To be an adult that they feel that they can open up to on like a peer-to-peer level.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
It's really amazing. And like the one thing I will say to anyone who's thinking about working with young people or like with anyone really is to just be really authentic.
Yeah.
Like I could see you in front of a group of young people.
Really?
Talking about... Yeah, no, but it's who you are intrinsically, I think.
Thank you.
Like if you don't
compliment.
I've seen like people who come and talk to young people and then all of a sudden, you know, they adopt like, I'm from East London, they adopt like this East London road accent and you're just like, the kids will see through that.
Yeah.
In like 2 seconds and they will rip you apart for it.
Kids are really, really like intuitive and they are brutal and they are truthful. And yeah, I think maybe that's what scares me about them.
Yeah, but the thing about young people at the minute is like they've got access to so much information and they're like things that we didn't figure out until our like
20s. Oh my God.
You know, they're already kind of like on it, like in terms of like activism and stuff. I really do.
That's great.
I really do. And there's like such a higher like level of like emotional intelligence with a lot of young people.
That's awesome.
So like, you know, we had a young person come out and the group just embraced that person
straight away
and they were like, we love you for who you are, you know. And you know, like when I was younger, I was petrified of like saying, you know, I'm in love with this woman.
Yeah.
Whereas they state their truth and they embrace each other for it, and I really, really like appreciate that. And it might be the microcosm of the area that I work in, it might be London, I'm not sure,
but that is awesome. Like I don't have any interactions with children, so I couldn't gauge it. I always want to hope and I always want to think, and when I do my activism or do any activist kind of work, I always hope. I think about the younger generation and the generation that's going to come after me. Like I've been doing my job for 10 years now and I start mentoring people, and some of the stuff I do for them. So
yeah,
it's a really awesome feeling to know that they really are taking what's at least some of us. Sorry, there's a helicopter going over my house. If you can hear it, it keeps happening. I don't know why people must keep having parties in the field behind me or something.
Oh wow.
I live in a great area of Kent. So ignore. What was I saying, QB? I've forgotten.
We were talking about, I guess, breaking barriers for the people that will follow us.
Yeah, people, when I do my activism work and stuff like that, I can't remember what I was going to say now. But I hope it helps the younger generation. And it's a great feeling knowing that they are doing that and running with that pattern, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you think, what do you think of, this is going to make me sound like an old person, the youth of today?
The youth of today.
Yeah.
I have so much hope.
Yeah.
Actually, it's kind of like a two-level thing. Like on one hand, I have so much hope in the sense that, you know, they are so much more aware than us. They care about things, you know, like the environment, Black Lives Matter. Like that's been a big conversation I've been having with young people this week.
That's great.
The LGBTQ plus community, and you know, for a lot of the young people that I work with, they're like, what can I do, how can I help?
Awesome.
And then on the flip side, I guess they're inheriting what we leave them, which can be seen in good ways and bad ways.
It seems so right scary now. Yeah, even inheriting the world that we've inherited from our parents, I'm like, oh thanks guys for that.
Yeah,
so I can only imagine how they feel.
Yeah. And I think as things become clearer and as we have access to more information and learning, I hope that young people want to create change. I hope they make ripples. I hope they break glass ceilings and stuff like that. Because, you know, my work 10 years ago, for example, is I was working with young people who were vulnerable. And they were angry, but they didn't understand why they were angry.
Right.
You know, they didn't have access or an understanding.
That kind of,
to like, you know, like capitalism and things like that. Whereas now we can say like, we are angry or we are being screwed over because capitalism.
We figured out what the fuck you guys are doing. And it's fucked up. That's awesome. I didn't think about it in that way. I suppose the access to information has really come on in the last 10 years or so, hasn't it? I don't think I had a smartphone when I was in school.
No, I didn't.
No, I had.
And I'm older than you.
I think I had a slide phone. What did you have?
Did
you
have? Oh my god! Yeah. Okay, so my first phone. Anyone who is an old head will know the Nokia banana phone, and it like looked like a phone, and the bottom bit would slide down, and there were the buttons.
Yeah, jeez. I think my dad had one. I think they gave it to me.
That makes me feel really old.
You're not old at all. You're just ahead of your time, Kiwi.
Yes. That is what I am.
Tech savvy woman making her way through the world.
Yeah, O2 Genie. Do you know what that is?
Oh, I've heard of those. I've heard those words, but I don't know what it is.
It was just like a pay-as-you-go SIM card.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Texting was just free.
Really? Free texting? My texts were like 7p for a text or like 3p or something like that. Even then it was outrageous.
Yeah, they cracked down on it after a while. Mm. Like when they realized people were making use of the text, they were like, you only get 300 free a month now.
Oh, out of order. I need at least 1,000. Some kids are not going to know what we're talking about.
Sorry, guys.
Oh, isn't that terrifying? Oh, 900 minutes, 3,000 texts.
Maybe we should bring it back to like childhood.
Bring
and stuff.
It back. Bring it back.
For example, microaggressions. Like when I was a teenager, you know, I didn't really know what a microaggression was, and I spent a lot of time feeling really uncomfortable and unsafe in places where I didn't feel I could say, you know, this is making me uncomfortable, can we please stop having this conversation?
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like, or I would hope, because I can't speak for every single young person, I would hope that they, if they see it, they could call it out.
They're more kind of validated, they're more I guess when you see more instances of it and people share their experience, then people are like, oh, you know what that person did was racist or it was sexist or it was just I didn't know it at the time. But having access to the shared human experience online I think has been a huge eye-opener. It's definitely something that's contributed to me being able to identify as like a femme non-binary person, etc. Like I googled that. I was like, can I identify and Google is a great resource, and I think I'm really glad that kids are using it because I know a lot of adults are not.
Yeah, you just wish it's the people that you wish would use it that don't.
I like, can you please just use this amazing invention? When was Google invented? When we were kids, right? God damn.
Not when I was a kid. Maybe when you were a kid.
I think when I was about 8, maybe. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. Let's not talk about our childhoods.
Yeah, it's just really awkward and kind of upsetting.
Literally history. So, QB, talk to me about the kind of conversations that you have with your kids. Because your job and your work and your life must have had a big impact on your parenting.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm of mixed cultural heritage, like I said. So, my dad is Indian, he's Tamil, and my mum is from the Philippines. And, you know, my son is half white British. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from a very young age, I was making him aware of his white privilege because colorism is so huge in Southeast Asian communities and South Asian communities. Actually, I should blanket that probably.
Yeah.
So talking about his white privilege, talking about his male privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely think, you know, for some of like my more old school friends and stuff like that, they're like, what are you doing? And it's like, well, actually, my kid needs to be aware of this because like, when Filipinos see him, for example, they're always like, oh my God, he's so fair, he's so white.
Ooh.
And you know, you're like, he isn't attractive because he's white.
Yeah, that shouldn't be like a quality even.
Yeah. He's a good looking kid. Like I can't knock that. And I guess it's really interesting as well because it kind of triggers my own traumas because like when I was growing up, I was always told, oh, you know, you would be so pretty if only you were fair. And as a little kid, like one of my nicknames was Black Beauty, which I'm sure people thought was a compliment.
Mm.
But you know, when you're like, I'm not actually that dark. I'm dark skinned for a Filipino person, but I'm not actually that dark. Yeah, and like with my daughter, I've spoken to her. You know, I've had to have the conversation. She got followed home from school.
Wow.
By this creepy guy who like followed her from the bus stop down our road, and like having to call the police and having to, you know, I'm sure you remember these conversations, you know, like walking with your keys, or like if you have perfume, spray that in his eyes, or if you've got change, chuck that in his face. So we've had to have those conversations. And when it happened, you know, she was 11. So she was in year 7 in school uniform.
Oh my gosh, so young.
You know, so those are the kind of conversations that we've had to have. But, you know, I feel like it's a difficult one. I want my kids to be kids.
Yeah.
I also need them to be aware of what's happening
in the
world, in their lives.
Yeah. Not knowing where to protect them, so...
Yeah, but you know what's really amazing, like my daughter when she was in year 6 was in the debate team.
Brad.
But like my daughter being my daughter wrote a 10-minute speech about Trump.
No.
So you know when you're just like my kids are freaking awesome.
Dropping mics. Yeah. Yes. So you can tell that you've raised your children amazingly.
Oh, thank you.
Oh my God, amazing. So it's really interesting that you have a son and then a daughter and you've had these differing conversations.
Yeah.
That must be an interesting perspective for you, and it must give you a lot of insight for your work. Sort of.
Absolutely, it does.
Parent, I think parent and boy, or at least socially conditioned boys and girls.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, and
sorry,
can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm back. So sorry, when I'll crunch you then.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Sorry.
So I've had these conversations with both the kids, but then I've also had extra conversations with my son.
Yeah.
Because as a man, I need him to, or as a young man, I need him to be aware of his privilege and how also his privilege can oppress other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really, really important. I guess coming from that sex education background has been really helpful as well. You know, to fully discuss with him, you know, what is consent?
That's quite an explicit conversation to have. Yeah.
Yeah. And also consent over your own body. So like, for example, a thing for us is like culturally, when we go from house to house, you give everyone a hug and a kiss on both cheeks, and being like, you know what, if someone's like, come and give me a hug, and you don't feel like it, you're allowed to say no.
That's awesome.
So yeah, but I feel like, you know, as we need to battle all of these stigmas, we need to break all this stigma. And I feel like, yeah, you know what, school does a really good job, or you know, they try to it's teach the best people these things. Have,
yeah.
But if it's not at home, then you know, you can't reinforce those lessons if you're not also having it at home.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've had, I used to teach sexism workshops in schools. Mm. Uh-huh. And I've had guys, I say guys, they're like 12, step to me, like go toe to toe, get in my face.
Wow.
And be like, I don't like what you're saying, miss. You know, my holy book says that's not true, I don't agree with you, or, you know, my dad doesn't believe that. And it's just a bit like,
wow, okay, we've got work to do. Yeah. Wow, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's intense.
Yeah,
how attacked someone can feel if you're essentially saying something that's intrinsically true for them.
Yeah.
Really, you know, because like
with their reality, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I'm one of those people, I rock the boat, I try to make you think a little bit.
I think it's important, yeah, especially kids, so, young minds.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, for example, what I said was, like, you know, you believe, or most people believe, that God is a man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not trying to rock the boat there. If that's what you believe, that's what you believe. But please tell me, in what species in the animal kingdom a man gives birth, or the male or the species gives birth? And they're all like, huh?
And yeah, then, you like, kind of have to just throw facts at them, right?
Yeah, especially because, you know, a lot of cultures, it's kind of been smushed out now, you know, are matriarchal lines.
Yeah.
Where the woman is the divine, women are the heads of the households and stuff like that. And it's like, actually, that's changed with intention.
Very much so. The patriarchy is very intentional.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, talking to my son, for example, when we are talking about toxic masculinity and the patriarchy,
so important,
is like teaching him it's okay to cry.
Yeah, I was going to say, for his benefit too, not just to protect other people, but to make sure that he can express himself in a way that he's probably made to feel like he can't.
Yeah.
Has he said anything like that to you? Has he experienced anything like that, and he's been able to flag it as toxic masculinity? Is he aware yet?
Absolutely.
Oh, really? Great.
He's absolutely, you know, come back and been like, somebody said this, and I, you know, it's made me feel uncomfortable. Like, talking about how he feels unsafe in situations where he doesn't feel like he can cry or express emotion.
Mm.
And working through that with him, especially, you know, if he is in what he would consider to be an unsafe place, like somewhere where he can't say how he feels because the repercussions are going to be long lasting.
Not worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's really difficult to support your kids through those kind of moments where you're just like, unfortunately, that situation with that person is not going to change, but let's talk about what you can do outside of your relationship with that person.
Yeah, that is tough. That must be tough on you as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really hard when you think, like, people that your children should be close to or safe with isn't necessarily that, because of whatever, usually toxic masculinity, but yeah.
Society.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's tough, because that's something that's really out of your control. I suppose being a parent, it doesn't appeal to me, and I think one of the reasons is I very much wouldn't have control over my child's experience, and it must be a difficult thing to surrender and be like, my child will experience toxic masculinity, my child will experience racism, my child will experience these horrible things, and I'm just here to guide them and help them through those moments.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well, like, I will say I realized, I think because, you know, I had my kids when I was young, is realizing that you cannot shape every experience. You cannot make your child who you want them to be. Mm. You cannot control everything. And it, not the control aspect, but it can be really heartbreaking knowing that you can't protect them from everything, and that they have to go out into the world and experience this stuff.
Which will
potentially
hurt them.
Traumatic.
Yeah, that's tough. How is that experience, or that kind of, or just being a parent in general, helped you process your experiences as a child that shaped your life, your traumas and stuff? Has it shed any light on that for you, or helped you heal in any way, or?
It's really interesting that you say that. It's definitely highlighted to me when I am repeating patterns.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I will say something and be like, whoa, I sounded like my mum just then.
Straight away, you're like,
and deja being me. Like, I am sorry. Because I don't know if this is like a Filipino thing or like, like my mum never said sorry.
Mm-hmm.
When I was
Yeah, they're
up,
always like, right. The adult is supremely right. Mm.
Even when she was wrong, she would maybe skirt around the fact that she was wrong, but she would never apologize.
Oh yeah, okay, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you're just like, if I'm ever in that situation, like being able to apologize, being able to put my hands up and go, you know what, I see what I'm doing is unhealthy.
Mm.
And so I'm gonna stop.
Well done. That's awesome.
So that would definitely be something, and I guess improving or evolving does help you feel like you're healing, but it also makes you, I guess, address your childhood as well. And I guess it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, is being able to do that work, like spending some time with that.
Yeah. How have you went through that? Through therapy and journaling?
I did psychodynamic therapy
for
a year. And it just so happened that the therapist that I had worked with me on the concept of being a good enough parent.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this whole movement, this whole book.
I've heard of it. Yeah, it sounds rad.
Yeah. And the one thing that has really stuck with me, and I tell everyone all the time when they're like telling me about their situations, is you do the best you can with what you have in that time and space. So exactly. It's like, I feel madly guilty when I was a teenager, you know, I made mistakes, I was learning, I was trying to figure out what being a parent meant, and I hold a lot of guilt for that. Mm. But that is what 18-year-old me could do at that time. If it was 23-year-old me or 35-year-old me, I'd totally deal with it differently, but that's because I have all the learning.
That's awesome that you can realize that.
Yeah, it doesn't make the feelings of guilt. Just talk and be like, you can do the self-talk and say, you know, like, could I have done better? Yes, but that's because I know now.
You know now.
So next time I'll do better next time.
Yeah. I feel similarly about
therapy. And I'm very honest with the kids. Sorry, go say again.
No, I was just saying I feel very similarly about therapy.
Oh, did you do any like concepts like that?
Just talking through and unpacking things. My therapist, my therapist is a counselor. I don't know what that kind of differentiates between types of therapy, but I just kind of, it's just a talking therapy really. But just being able to unpack things is really helpful.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
QB, talk to me about other things that are your passion in life. Because we've talked a lot about your job and your work. But as we were saying earlier, that's not all there is to life, is there?
No, it does feel like there's all. You know, when you're just like, right now, I'm being like really narrow. And I'm like, that feels like all there is to it. No, it isn't. So one of the things that I'm absolutely in love with is vintage and retro clothing.
Love.
So when the shops are open, when the charity shops are open, I love a car boot sale. I love a charity shop.
Same.
And I love trawling for treasures. And I guess I love the fact that secondhand items and secondhand clothing, it all has like a story.
I can feel the energy from it, can't you?
Yeah.
And
I'm also madly obsessed with like jewelry.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Like, I'm always scouring for things, and I'm always picking. I'm a bit of a magpie. Anything like with sequins, glitter, diamantes, I'm like, give it to me. Shiny. It's beautiful. Yeah, literally. I'm so bad for it.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, so I would say that's, and that has creeped over from, it started with secondhand clothing. I was quite lucky. So my mum used to work on the weekends, and during the she worked nights, and during the day she would be asleep. And my uncle and my cousin, they would take me out for the day so that my mum could rest in peace. Yeah. And we would always go to like Greenwich Market, Woolwich Market. Awesome. We'd hit the charity shops. And my uncle would always give me £5 because back in the day, you could get a lot for that.
Shit, you could get a lot for that, right? In a charity shop, you get like three things.
Yeah. And it was always like, do I get lots of little things or do I get like one big thing? And so what ended up happening was I would always end up getting like lots of little things, but that definitely sparked my obsession with like secondhand things.
Yeah.
And so secondhand clothing, bags and stuff like that has always been a love. And then as I've gotten older and I now have my house, it's moved over into things like the furniture and like knickknacks for my house and stuff like that. And I've managed to like pick up really random stuff. So I got like a sketch watercolor of like a dog.
Oh, cute.
And it was £1 in a charity shop.
Oh, I love a bargain.
I love £1 charity shops. That's a new thing.
If it's just a pound coin, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and, like and the ones that are only £1. Is that right?
Yeah, like yeah, the whole store is only £1. Like, what's that about? That's amazing. And so I got this dog painting and it had a signature. And I was like, you know what? That signature's quite clear. Let me Google who that is. And it, like, the print, like, if I sold it, would be worth like £200.
Really? So you made
someone chuck that away.
Somebody just gave it away. What? Where was this? Where was the charity shop? Was it in like a nice area? I was trying to go to charity shops in like Chelsea and Kensington and stuff.
You know what? The really great charity shops are in North London.
Oh yeah.
A bit more well-to-do kind of areas.
Get you.
But like there was I think it was Oxfam near my aunt's house in Chelsea, and I remember she got a pair of unworn DKNY pedal pushers because pedal pushers were a vibe.
I had them
for like 50p, and they were brand new and DKNY. Like,
no,
go to rather posh areas.
Oh my gosh, that's just
and
that's
you'll
just
find awesome stuff.
Giveawayable. Oh my goodness, it's crazy.
Yeah, I know.
We're gonna have to go charity shop. I can't wait to go outside again. What are your plans when the world starts up again, Kiwi?
When the world I recently got engaged.
Oh my god, congrats.
Yeah, so wedding planning is meant to be a whole thing.
Wow.
But my fiance actually lives in Chicago.
Oh wow. Far.
Yeah, so I was actually meant to be in Texas right now for a wedding that has been postponed.
Damn.
So yeah, I'd quite like to see my fiance. It's been 6 months.
Oh shit, girl. Yeah. Fuck. When do you think that's going to be? America looks a bit scary. Although, like, when you look at our statistics as well, it's I know it looks like chaos, pure chaos.
Yeah. And that's so I have like this weird question that nobody seems to know the answer to.
Right.
Is like, if you go abroad or if you go on holiday, you're meant to like self-isolate for 2 weeks. But what happens if you only go on holiday for like a week?
That's what I mean. That's what people have been saying. Like, there's literally no point. You're not allowed to leave the resort. You have to give your address and stuff. Like, I don't want to go in like a pool or something. And then when you come home, you can't go back to work. You have to take 2 weeks off to quarantine. So you have to use 3 weeks of your holiday if you have like a job.
If your work will even let you get away with that.
So there's absolutely no way. Imagine all your staff having to take 3 weeks holiday over the summer. I saw your staff gone. So
at some point. I don't know when that's going to happen or what that's going to look like.
Maybe both of you just agree to meet up in New Zealand. That's kind of accessible to both of you, right?
I love do they call Jacinda them a president or is it a prime minister?
I think she's a prime minister. Yeah, Jacinda, oh my god, join the fan club please. We love her. We love
she's
her.
Amazing.
And she did it all whilst with a babe in arms. Like,
yeah, like she, you know, she just got voted in. She had a newborn babe quite a young babe.
I think she gave birth during her term.
What?
Like, really early.
A legend.
I know. Like, just carried on.
More women in positions of power.
And look
please
at how their country, and look at how New Zealand's faring. I know their population density is a lot lower, but just the general, the way that the world looks at New Zealand, why can't we be like that? We have the resources.
Well, we have all the resources.
We have so many. We took them all. Britain took them all for themselves, and they still fucked it up. They were like, "Ha ha!" Like it's like somebody that gets a huge inheritance, or not even inheritance, theft, or they win the lottery illegally, and then they spunk it all on bullshit. It's dumb. Yeah. It's enraging. So working in youth services, you must be affected by budget cuts.
So you feel that at all? I'm really lucky.
Oh yeah.
I'm really lucky. The borough that I work for.
Yeah.
The mayor has pledged to double the youth service.
Amazing. That's what we need.
Over the course of their term.
Great.
But I have worked in boroughs where youth services have been like completely scrapped, and then you see things like drug use or crime rates or whatever shoot up. But then I'm a bit like, if you've got nothing for young people to do, they are gonna find ways to amuse themselves.
That's literally exactly, it's been scientifically proven. I think there was a study, it was done on rats, very sad, unfortunate, do not condone animal testing, but there were rats in an empty pen. And they were given water, a normal water, and a water that was infused with cocaine, which is obviously addictive.
Yeah.
And then they had rats in another pen, which had loads of stimulus things for them to play with and friends and stuff. And they had gave them a normal water and a cocaine water. In the empty pen, with nothing to do, rats immediately became hooked on the cocaine water because they were bored shitless. But in the normal pen, where they had interaction and stimulus, they actually didn't touch the cocaine water at all.
Love that.
I know, it's like, I was like, well, there you fucking go. What do you expect people to do in communities that are deliberately defunded or underfunded or deliberately strangled? Yeah, and then gentrified as well on top.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my passions. I think that there need to be positive activities for young people
so much
on their doorstep, you know, because traveling, I mean, I don't know what it's like in other parts, but in London, you know, you can't go from one postcode to the other. So there needs to be things on your doorstep for you to do that are positive.
It should be the way it is. Community, like we were saying right in the beginning, right? Community is such an important
thing. And that's a huge
thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and you know, like I said to you, my mom came here and we didn't have any family here. So, like, my friends are the family I've chosen.
Yeah.
And it's very similarly for young people, their friends are their family, you know, because of all the hormone changes and all that fun stuff that happen when
absolutely
you're a teenager,
you bond
there should be things for them to do. So yeah, that really annoys me that youth services, charities, they're being shut down, funded less and less, and it's like they're superstars because, you know, they will work on a shoestring budget and make things happen, but it shouldn't have to be like that. Because children are going to grow up to be adults, guys. Like, come on.
They're literally the next generation. Like, why would you deliberately underfund the next generation of humanity? If I thought that was the only purpose to be alive is to continue our race, our human race, right? Is that not?
Yeah.
Like, so why? I don't understand why people are doing the pulling up of the ladder after them. It's such a bizarre thing to me.
I think politically, you know, they're doing things that make their voting stream happy.
Yeah.
And I guess we kind of historically know that the voters are older for certain, you know, constituencies and certain politicians.
Yeah.
So they're doing things to make those people happy. But like in our current, I want to call it a regime.
Oh, it is though.
Awkward. It's like this current, you know, our current political landscape doesn't help anybody. Well,
literally,
except, you know, that 1%.
Yeah, literally, Boris, maybe. And even not then.
It's really interesting that people vote against their self-interests.
They really do. And their children as well, etc. I find it must be such a fascinating complex for people to do that. There's plenty of metaphors, I think. But like people voting for their own demise.
Yeah. I remember sitting on the bus after the Brexit vote had come in.
Oh,
I literally woke up, my mum told me, I started crying.
Me too.
And I was on the bus on the way to a school, so I was sitting with all these school kids and listening to them be like, why do these people get to vote for Brexit when Brexit doesn't really affect them anyway, it affects us. And it's just like, these young people are really cognizant of what's going on around them,
yeah.
but they're also really aware of the fact that people are voting against their best interests, which so again much. Makes them angry.
And damn right it should. I was about to ask you, how does your interaction with young people and voting, like, are they, because people are always saying in the media, or at least our British right-wing old middle-class media is saying that young people are not engaging with politics, or they feel disenfranchised by it, therefore they're not engaging. But what are they genuinely feeling about it from your experience?
I definitely get the vibe that young people are feeling disenfranchised.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they know that these things are not for them. They know that they're impacted negatively. But that's why movements like Grime for Corbyn were so huge, is, you know, these young people are political. If they're disenfranchised, why are we not doing something about that disenfranchisement, as opposed to continuing on the way that we're continuing? Like, I really hope moving forward that we don't have this weird two-party system that isn't called a two-party system, but it really is.
It literally is, yeah.
You know, I'd really love to see political parties, you know, having more to say about young people, having more to say about, you know, the vast majority, the masses, and people voting for them, not thinking, you know, we need to vote strategically, because I think if we put our votes where they're meant to go, then fingers crossed we end up with something we do, we want.
Yeah, and even the system is rigged in a way where it's difficult for that, isn't it?
Yeah.
So as a mother, would you advise people to have these kinds of conversations with their kids? Because I'm sure you have great conversations with your kids about it. But I think it's important because, like, we don't get taught how politics works in school. I didn't know how the political system worked. I didn't know what first past the post was.
Absolutely.
So how can people engage with their kids about this?
I would say create a space.
Yeah.
Create a safe space first, and state it. So there's this big thing that we do in youth work, and we call it stating your intention. So, you know, saying like, I'd really like to talk to you about this. I want to create a space for us to talk about this. You know, when can we do it? Or do you have time now? And then kind of, I guess, saying what you'd like to get out of that conversation, but also hearing from your young person, your child, what they would like to get out of the conversation. Because if your child says to you, like, I'd really like for this to be over,
yeah,
then that is not the best time to have that conversation.
Clearly, you're not going to get through to them, yeah.
Yeah, that's not the moment. And then, I guess, being really clear, planning what you're going to say or what you'd like to discuss. Keeping it age appropriate. Because I've had like some really hard hitting conversations with my kids from when they were young. But that's because I built on it. It was building blocks.
That's how it should be. Yeah.
Yeah. So keep it simple, keep it clear, and be honest. Like, no one's expecting you to have the answer to everything. I do it with my students all the time. I say it to my children all the time. It's like, I don't actually know the answer to that question either. Let's Google it together. Or you go Google it and tell me what you learned, or I will Google it and I will tell you what I've learned.
And then you can have like a knowledge exchange.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that too.
And also leave room for their opinions. You know, let them feel and let them be as necessary in that moment. Because if you're having a conversation about racism, for example, you know, it's an upsetting conversation. If they, you know, like, don't expect them to stop crying really quick or whatever, like, leave room
for them to express themselves.
Rush. So if you're having this conversation and you know you've only got 10 minutes for this conversation, maybe don't have it now.
That's right. Now is not the time. Hold space
Hold space. And that is, it's one of those things, is that your children, your young people will really appreciate that, because they need to feel safe and secure in order to be honest. And if you're honest with them, then they'll be honest with you.
Yeah, that's so true. They can sense it. People don't give kids enough credit for their intuition. Absolutely.
No.
Did you feel heard as a child? Not even just by your parents, but by any authority figures on things like this?
Not at all.
Not at all? No.
I would definitely say, like, culturally as well, it was like children are seen and not heard.
Really?
As wow. well. Like, mm. in a space, you need to be really respectful to the elders. You're not allowed to answer back. You're not allowed to, you know, you're not allowed to disagree.
Yeah.
You know, just sit in the corner, look pretty in your nice dress and just stay quiet. And it's really funny because I've taught my children to not be like that. And then when really? They're like that, I'm like, you should respect me. And I'm like, wait, hold on.
I'm doing it again.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just, it's that really weird, like, sort of what you've been trained to think of how to act and react. What you would like it to, what you would actually like it to be. And I have to train myself as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. I mean, it's work, it's self-work as well at the same time. Every day is a school day, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what are your... What are your like emotions when you have these conversations? Because they must be like, everybody expects parents, I think, to be fine after everything. And it can be quite taxing on you as well.
So remember how I told you at like the beginning of our conversation that I made this kind of decision to be like really honest with myself and with other people. And I think when you are honest all the time, you are leaving room for yourself to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So you're always kind of in this vulnerable state because, you know, you're wearing your heart on your sleeve.
Yeah.
But it would be really disingenuous of me if I didn't do that with my young people, with my children as well, with my children first and foremost. So, like, for example, when I was explaining, you know, my mental health condition, and explaining mental health in general, you know, that was really vulnerable. I had a little cry. But then I also said to them, you know, like, sometimes I get sad. Look, when they were very young, they were like, what does this mean? And, you know, like, sometimes I get sad and I can't pull myself out of it. But there are other times when I won't be like this. My brain has just gone completely blank.
it's because I guess it's such a difficult thing. You having the way you feel when you have these difficult conversations with your children about your mental health, about toxic masculinity, like your emotions and stuff like that. How do they manifest in you?
So, I'm trying to think of like the best way to answer that. Yeah, I guess it's coming from a place of vulnerability and being honest about that vulnerability.
Yeah.
And that's really the best advice I can give you, because children are amazingly resilient.
Yeah, and perceptive, I was gonna say.
Yeah, they really get it. Mm-hmm. And you know, they might not see it in exactly the same way that you do, but you know, trust that they can handle it if you keep it age appropriate.
Yeah.
Like, and the one thing I'll say is my children are amazing humans.
Of course they are. They've got you for a mama.
Thank you. But the thing is, if you never speak to them about these kind of things,
yeah,
you know, they don't have an opportunity to break those barriers. Like, you're breaking those barriers by having those conversations with them.
Yeah.
Statistics show that children who have parents with a mental health issue do better when their parents are honest and tell them about it.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
Yeah. You'd be surprised, because empathy is a learned skill.
Definitely learn to harness it, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, the more you talk to them about things, about your own feelings, you know, first they mirror and then they understand for themselves.
Yeah. A lot of kids don't have that, I think, when they're young, don't they? They don't have the examples of healthy emotions. I think that must be a toxic masculinity thing. They don't have healthy examples. Like, I never saw my mom cry when I was young. But recently, when I, as an older person, she told me that she would sometimes just take herself away and sit in her little ensuite and just have a cry when I was a kid. And now I'm like, oh, mom,
yeah.
I'm so sad about that. Like, And I'm not a really cry person. I don't cry in front of people. Mm. And it definitely stems from my childhood, I think.
Yeah.
So it's really important.
And I don't know if you ever feel like this, is when you're trying not to let those emotions show, you end up being quite like snappy.
Yeah, it changes my personality.
I should totally be crying right now, but actually I just seem like angry and kind of aggressive to everyone.
That's it. You shut off your happiness and then you just become kind of like a default meanie.
I push
people away. I definitely think I do that. And whilst me and my mom have a better relationship now, it was turbulent as a kid. And my therapist, as we were talking about therapy earlier, really recommended I reconnect with her. So I think it's so important to have a good relationship with your parents, if you can, obviously.
Yeah. It can be difficult if there's like some big unresolved things between you. But if you have that space, if you have that opportunity, it can be really healing. Mm. And I don't know how many people know this, but like if you are in talking therapies, especially like with the NHS and stuff like that, is if you find that your issues stem from like a parent or whatever, you can invite them into that space if you talk about it with your therapist.
Yeah,
that can happen. And it often feels a lot safer to have those conversations when you have someone to mediate.
So much. I think especially in families, when you're so close, and especially with the parent-child dynamic, you can easily be steamrolled, or you can be just seen in a way as that you're the child and they're the parent. Mm. And that power dynamic really kind of can throw a conversation like that off. So I so recommend. I haven't actually brought my mum in, but I've talked about her so much, and I've considered bringing my mum into therapy. I think she needs therapy as well, but that's a whole other thing.
Well, that's the thing. I am really big on therapy being something preemptive. I think everyone should be in therapy.
So much. Everyone's had stuff that at least needs unpacking a little bit, because we're all born to other people with their own unresolved trauma. It's generational. It's proven to be passed down through our genes and stuff now as well. So.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, you could have the most perfect parents, but you still have to go to school, you still have to interact with other people. Like all of us have trauma from somewhere. So it's like, I think everyone should be in therapy all the time. I think it's absolutely great.
Agree. Can we prescribe everybody just therapy right now? Everybody listening, go and get therapy, please.
Yes. Even if you think you have nothing to talk about.
I promise you, once you start talking, you'll start talking. I went to therapy. I was therapy expecting to be there for like 3 months, and then I was in there for a year and a half, and then I took a break, and now I'm back in therapy and I'm happy about it.
Amazing.
And I think it's awesome. And I think we need to, more people need to be fine about that, right?
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And even just having that space to talk, you know, is absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have weekly therapy then?
So I'm not in therapy at the moment. I am waiting on a wait I'm on a waiting list
right
god my english Always. I'm on a waiting, on a waiting list to do have you heard of EMDR?
I've heard of it. I don't know what it is, but I've heard of it recently. But it's like a newer type of therapy, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's rapid eye movement. So they get you to look at certain points while you're talking about this is what I understand it to be. I might be wrong. They get you to look at certain points in the room or on a finger or something like that while you're addressing trauma, to sort of reprogram in your brain how you react and respond to trauma.
Mimics like a dream state or something.
Yeah, I've heard really good things.
That sounds amazing.
And I want to give it a go.
That sounds really amazing. Yeah, absolutely. Let me know how that goes. The waiting list must be as long as my arm.
Well, it's one of those things, like I kept going to the GP and the GP hadn't heard of it, and I was just like,
please,
how do I find this thing?
How do I access this? I think that's a big hurdle for a lot of people with mental health, isn't it? Accessing the services and going in and asking for what they know they need.
Absolutely. I think, like, I was diagnosed by the GP with like manic depression in maybe when I was about 20.
Yeah.
And it's like pushing to see someone, pushing to get diagnosed. Like that all takes strength. Someone with depression doesn't have at that moment.
Right. Like I'm white knuckling it to a crazy mood disorder. And you want me to also be ringing you every day? Like,
yeah, like fighting with your GP to like be referred somewhere.
Being like, you're wrong. Even though you're supposedly more knowledgeable, you're wrong. And I know me.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of strength and I think, again, authenticity to yourself to stand your ground and be like, I know this about myself and I know I need this.
Absolutely.
Mm. Yubi, I feel like we're quite similar. Quite similar people. We've got our rebellious streak. We've got our stand our ground streak. Yubi, thank you so much for talking to me today. I've had a really lovely conversation.
Thank you very much.
What are you planning for the rest of your day? Of course. I'm so sorry it took me so long to set this up. I've had a 3-week gap from Crivitation now. It's been a wild time.
Oh, but I love listening to them and I love that you do this. It's so amazing.
Oh, I'm so, so pleased that you do. Thank you so much. So yeah, what are you doing with your evening? Just a nice chill?
My mum has cooked some food and I can smell it. Mm. And I'm just like, I think... For anyone who knows Filipino food, it's called adobo. It's amazing.
Amazing.
If you can, try it somewhere. It's like basically, well, it's usually meat that's braised in like soy sauce.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
Serious thing.
That's everything I want in life, just salty goodness. Yes. Oh, thank you so much, Yubi. Where can we find you on the internet?
Okay, so I am on Instagram. Find me at Call Me QB, CallMeKyubii. I don't know why I found that so hard.
it's when you start reading out, you get lost in the middle, don't you? Because you never actually like really read your handle out. I mean, I do just in my job. I've kind of got like, I have to have like a little jingle.
Yes, no, I do like the way you say it. You have like
it's like a phone number, isn't it? You know, you remember it in like chunks.
So I'm currently on a bit of a social media hiatus type thing. I've archived loads of stuff. I'm thinking about updating it and making it, you know, a bit more fancy and new and impressive to look at, because I've seen some really amazing ones. And you can find me on Suicide Girls on the same handle.
Yes, SG. Amazing. Queen, thank you so much. I hope
you
enjoy your delicious, delicious mum cooked food. I wish I had someone to cook me food. I've been self-isolating on my own. It's been boring as hell.
Who is it?
I know. I've got my cat. He actually hasn't made an appearance in this episode
for the
first time ever. You'll have to come and meet him. I'm going to have a lovely garden party at some point in the future of the earth. I don't know when.
If we get lucky, some sort of end of summer barbecue
type
time.
Right. Maybe end of summer. Who knows? Oh. Well, I'll let you go and enjoy your evening, Queen. Thank you so much. You've been a dream.
Have a good one. Thank you. Have a
love
good evening,
you,
my lovely.
Thank you. See ya.
Bye. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.